Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
JoeDanMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I am your host, Kel Fritzy. We have quite a few issues to get through, but do you want to hear about what's going on in the life of Kel? As everybody knows, I adopted a dog, Dobby Amber, and Freya, my cat, has not taken well to it. Well, 3 weeks later, they actually, for the first time today, they sat in the same room together, Freya eyeing Dobby rather suspiciously, Dobby snoring on the dog bed, ignoring Freya. Dobby came down and, touched noses with Freya, and lo and behold, Freya did not swat him. So, okay, we're making progress here. I'm very pleased that maybe one day they'll eventually bond, and what's going to happen, they will plot behind my back. Who knows? Could be Lord of the Flies around here. Who knows? But all the same, slowly but surely, we're getting there. In other news, my passport application renewal came back. I sent it off 3 weeks ago today. Got a registered response. I forgot to fill out a box. Yeah. Everything was perfect. I had my guarantor. I had my passport photos. I had everything. It was tickety-boo. But I forgot to tick off one tiny little box. So they sent my entire application back to me. And I have to redo it all over again. So, so much for visiting overseas or in the United States for the next little while, because it's probably going to be another month before it's processed and I'm approved. Thanks a lot, you fucking Muslims. And no offense, to the kids out there, but I'm very unhappy. This cost me over $100 to get processed. Now, what they did do is that they sent me back a receipt saying that they did not take it. My money, because they're quite confident the next time around will be the money shot. In other news, in the life of Kel, we have been on probably our 35th day of poor weather. We had some sprinkling of sunshine throughout the week, but we are under thunderstorm warnings again. I have not had sunshine on my face for a very long time, except when I went over to my neighbor's place and took pictures of my neighbor's chickens. Okay, more in the news of the personal life of Kel. Oh, boy. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I know a lot of people, though, they're concerned about Tim Burton. Everybody knows he's my co-host on Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Red Fox Blogger, and my co-host at 6 p.m. on Radio Jihad Network. People know that he had a heart attack, and he is in hospital. I spoke with him in June this morning, and he is doing quite well. He may actually be able to go home tomorrow, as of tomorrow. That's good news. He had a stent placed in. He will have to go back and have more stents put in. But Tim is out of commission on the radio shows for quite a few weeks. I will be flying solo. Unless I can convince somebody to co-host with me on Mondays and Tuesdays. The Tuesday shows, they pretty much take care of themselves because I have guests. That's fine. I usually have the guests maybe for, 40, 45 minutes. It's going to be unusual doing these shows without Tim. But his total health is more important than any of these programs. So I will get by. Tim and June, they want to thank you both. They both want to thank you for your warm well wishes and the outpouring of support while Tim deals with this health crisis. It has been amazing. The BTR family, the Facebook family, the Pundit Press family, the Radio G-Head family, and everybody else. Tim has read each and every message. June has ensured that he gets them all. So, me, on a personal note, I want to thank you as well. Tim is a very, very, very important voice in the Counter Jihad movement. So for it to be temporarily silenced right now is kind of tough on a lot of us. But he's doing all right. He is cracking wise, as he's wont to do. He is sitting up in the hospital bed and complaining about the lack of Wi-Fi, as he's wont to do. But he does have some ability to write his articles and get them sent off to the Brenner Brief. If you scroll up, you'll see a slide of the Brenner Brief, and for the archive listeners, a direct link to Tim Burton's articles at the Brenner Brief is right there. But hey, welcome everybody. Like I say, I am Kel Fritzy. I am the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm mad as hell tonight. You know, this is what happens when I'm left to my own devices. I'm incorrigible. I really am. I don't make any apologies for my behaviorisms on the Friday show because there is always something out there that really, really gets to me. And it's always something to do with Islam. I'm going to be conveying heavily on an article from, you won't believe this, from Tim Burton. I'm going to share a few things with you. I got a clip here from Wild Bill for America. I'm going to play that one a little later on. But I do want to move into the meat and potatoes of what's going on in terms of appeasement. And it is. It's total appeasement. I'll put this in the chat room, but like I say, you guys can go to Brenner Brief and look at Tim Burton's article pertaining to this one. And oh my goodness me, where did I go? As usual, I'm all over the place, but that's all right. Hey, I've got people coming in here. I've got A12 Iggy Mom, Bigfoot, some guests, Rockin' Ron, who is Golf Dogs, and Moving Forward. Thanks, guys. I can't type with one hand. The next break, you guys are getting a big, huge hugs and kudos in the chat room. But, yeah, this is amazing to me, the appeasement of our respective governments. It's not only the United States. It's Canada. It's the UK. You know, this is despite pronouncements from Obama and Kerry and Saudi Grand Mufti that ISIS atrocities are 100% justified in Islam. Okay, this article is pretty much pertaining to the usurper administration. But I will get to international appeasement in a moment. But this is a very well-written article by Tim Burton, and I want to share this with you. President Obama, Secretary of State John Kerry, and the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia, they're keen to play down the Islamic State. They're playing the atrocities that they're capable of in Iraq and Syria. It's having, quote, unquote, nothing to do with Islam. Oh, my gosh. Nothing to do with Islam? Now, theological analysis, you know, they suggest otherwise. You know, we have seen the recent events in Iraq and Syria. Come on. And most recently, the beheading of the journalist John William Foley. And this was apparently carried out by a British journalist. Now, this is alleged because he's not been caught, and so he can't be charged and taken to trial. So we have to use the word allegedly. Now, this has prompted many of the so-called great and good to say that such atrocities have nothing to do with Islam. Oh, come on. It's easy. It's so bloody easy to see why they would indulge in such wishful thinking. Remember, we're talking about our Western appeasers. It would be easy to see why they would indulge in such wishful thinking. For if they were to admit that such atrocities have everything to do with Islam, as in fact they do, they might be forced to reevaluate their carefully crafted conceptions. And this is in order to reflect reality rather than fantasy, as this is unfortunately the case at the moment, and we know it is. And you know what? Worse still, the average man in the street might begin to understand the reality of Islam rather than the sorry, just took a drink out of my water bottle. This would force them to reevaluate their carefully crafted conception. Like, you know, the average man is beginning to understand the reality of Islam. No longer does the carefully peddled fantasy sold to us by our political elites in our mainstream media is going to fly anymore. You know what? The cat would be set amongst the pigeons. That's true. We are waking up, ladies and gentlemen. We are figuring out exactly what Islam is. ISIS ensured it. ISIS is a form of Wahhabism. ISIS is set upon a caliphate. They are practicing the most strict form of Islam. I kind of find that a little, you know, pedestrian, because Islam is Islam. You follow or you don't. I am sick and tired of our politicians trying to whitewash it. I'm sick and tired of the unwashed masses not paying attention to it. It is ISIS jihadists themselves. They take great pains to justify what they do in Islamic terms. Okay? And indeed, many have taken to social media. Yeah. Got that one right. Yeah, they sure love their YouTube. And they love their Twitter accounts. They try to explain their actions in Islamic terms, but this is to a bewildered world that has been fed the line that Islam is benign and tolerant. It is a religion of peace, totally compatible with Western civilization and Western notions of freedom and democracy. The only problem with this line, of course, we know, is that it's a lie. It's complete fiction. We know that. Everybody knows that now. Well, my listeners do. The big lie. It's worthy of Joseph Goebbels himself, who once said, if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. This is so true. It's when I was speaking with Tim about this issue, it was on a familiar topic, and it's true. If you tell a big lie enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. And that always brings me to the parable about the emperor who has no clothes. Everybody falls in. Everybody believes the emperor in his finery, strutting down the street. Everybody is oohing and aahing, and it takes one voice in the parable from a little boy saying, the emperor is naked. How many more little boys do we need to speak out and say, Islam, you're naked, and you're a big, fat liar? So true. You know, Tim Burton carries forth with this article. He brings in the example in relation to the beheading of John Foley, but not only John Foley, but also the thousands of others during the advance of IS or ISIS through Iraq and Syria. There is an ISIS jihadist. His name is Abu Mansur. He has a Twitter account. You can follow him at Tafia Mansoura. He posted on his Twitter account that Khalid bin Walid beheaded 70,000 Persian prisoners of war after the Battle of Ulyas. That is 100% Islam. In case a munafiq or a hypocrite says it isn't. Yeah, that's what he said. He said that what we're doing is 100% Islam. He wanted to make it clear in case munafiq says it isn't. And the Islamic prophet Muhammad, I'm carrying on with this tweet. And the Islamic prophet Muhammad himself is reported to have personally beheaded between 400 and 900 members of the Banu Quraysh following the Battle of Trench in AD 627. Actually, I think it was around 1800, but tomatoes, tomatoes. One beheading is enough. Now, this is important. This is important for devout Muslims to consider that Muhammad was declared the perfect man. Al-Kamil is to be emulated in all things. And I'll explain to you what Al-Ihsan al-Kamal means. Al-Ihsan Kamal is an Islamic theology. It's also rendered as Islam-i-Kamal. In Persian and in Urdu, it's a term used as an honorific title to describe Muhammad. It is an Arabic phrase meaning the person who has reached perfection. This is a very important concept in Islamic culture of the prototype human being. Oh, you'll love this, guys. Pure consciousness, one's true identity, to be contrasted with the material human who is bound by one's senses and materialism. That term, it's used amongst Alawis, Alevis and Sufis, Ibn Arabi, and this is based on the Hadith. It's used amongst the Sunni scholars, but most importantly, it's used amongst the Wahhabis. Okay? So that is Al Ihsan al-Kamil. Tim Burton continued to carry forth in this article. And he gives credit to Jihad Watch for this. He speaks about what's going on, of course. The Imam Obama has spoken. Now, you know, keep in mind, we got to ensure that this is tongue-in-cheek. Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch said, "The Imam Obama has spoken. ISIS speaks for no religion. Their victims are overwhelmingly Muslim, and no faith teaches people to massacre innocents." Okay, we have to understand something here, ladies and gentlemen. Because yet, we have another dichotomy, and we have another contradiction. Islamic law mandates death for heretics and apostates. And that is what the Islamic State jihadis consider their Muslim victims to be. Also, the Quran teaches, when you meet the unbelievers, strike the neck. And that is from chapter 47, verse 4. Now, James Foley was certainly an unbeliever, and one from a state in which the Islamic State considers itself to be at war. Thus, they did not consider him innocent. Okay? This is what Barack Hussein Obama had to say. Their victims are overwhelmingly Muslim. Okay. Okay. You know, I won't delve into that one. But this second statement, in the same pair, in the same sentence, rather, "and no faith teaches people to massacre innocents." James Foley was an unbeliever, therefore he was not innocent. Obama, he excuses and he apologizes for Islam every time a jihadist atrocity affects the U.S. in some way. He would do far better to confront the Islamic State's Islamic justifications for its actions and call on Muslims in the U.S. and elsewhere to teach against these understandings of Islam that they ostensibly reject. But he never does. He never does that, guys. And he shows no interest in doing it. Once again, from Jihad Watch, quote, John Kerry on ISIS is an ugly insult to the peaceful religion they violate every day with their barbarity. The Imam Kerry did not explain how the Islamic State is violating the religion of peace. And that's a very, very, very good observation. You know what? Pay attention to that one, people. John Kerry said that ISIS is an ugly insult to the peaceful religion they violate every day with their barbarity, but he did not explain how the Islamic State is violating the religion of so-called peace. How are they violating the religion of peace, Imam John Kerry? All he is, he's just sure that they must be doing something, the possibility that they might be acting in accord with the Quran never enters his mind, even to be rejected, even to consider such a possibility would be Islamic phobic. John Kerry, you are so afraid to delve into the true black heart known as Islam. You're offering lip service to us, and we are not children, and we do not appreciate it. You know, but what do you expect, right? Oh, this is interesting. John Kerry, he learned about Islam from a board member of a lobbying group from the Islamic Republic of Iran, and her name is Reza Aslan. Okay, I got it. Totally understood. Oop, got it. Thanks, Eamon Kerry. Thanks for that. These people drive me crazy. This is Rich. Saudi Arabia's Grand Mufti denounces ISIS as enemy number one of Islam. Okay, now I want to really deconstruct this because this is pretty much the money shot, okay? This is the money shot. Although senior Wahhabi clerics endorse execution by beheading for offenses that include apostasy, adultery, and sorcery, oppose women driving or working, and describes Shiites as heretics, they differ from Al-Qaeda and Islamic State militants in opposing violent revolt. All right. I want you to pay attention to this one. This is very, very, very important, okay? Saudi Arabia's Grand Mufti denounces ISIS as enemy number one of Islam, and what I cited, you know, apostasy, adultery, sorcery, so on and so forth. Now, this is the closest this report gets to what it is really about. The Grand Mufti isn't saying that the Islamic State is the enemy number one of Islam because he thinks that it murders apostates, beheadings of infidels, kidnappings of infidel women, or people who are un-Islamic. He can't say that because the Saudis have spent billions spreading exactly that understanding of Islam around the world. No, he only objects to their carrying out a violent revolt. Let me repeat that. The Grand Mufti has no complaint with ISIS in their pursuit in killing the non-believer, my apologies. But he is really, really upset that they're letting the cat out of the bag. He's objecting to the violent message that they're sending. You know, they're going off the Islamic script. We have seen the political jihad, the creeping Sharia, the civilizational jihad. Yeah, he's just really pissed off that they went off script. Okay? We'll get that one cleared up right away. Now, that is, the Islamic State is a caliphate that styles itself as the ruler of all Muslims worldwide. In the eyes of the Islamic State's leader, then the Saudi kingdom has no legitimacy. The House of Saudi has no legitimacy. And so the House of Saudi's house, Mufti Dooley, issues this condemnation. Well, isn't that interesting? Of course it does, because ISIS is totally off the map. Pardon me. I have a cat by my feet. How you doing, Freya? Okay, I'm going to close out this article by Tim Burton, and this is his writer's note. This issue goes to the heart of why we have so many problems with the ideology of Islam. The fiction that Islam is somehow a benign and tolerant religion of peace has been propagated on so many levels that our political elites and mainstream media would appear naive and foolish if they were suddenly to do an about-turn and start to report on the true nature and the true teachings of Islam, such as the fact that it is a ruthless, totalitarian, a political ideology akin to Nazism with an agenda of world domination through any means possible, including a sustained campaign of fear, violence, intimidation, and terror, which explains perfectly why we see what we see on a daily basis with Muslims slaughtering Christians, Jews, Hindus, Sikh, Buddhists, Yazidis, and any other non-Muslim, or indeed anyone whom they consider to be insufficiently Muslim, in every country around the world where they feel strong enough to assert themselves. Perhaps the stark reality of the atrocities committed by ISIS will open up the eyes of many people to what we can expect, and we should follow this example. We should allow Islam to become dominant in our own Western countries. This is what we can expect. If we allow Islam to become dominant in our own Western countries, we are down a path of ruination. Okay, I went off script. But this article is from Tim Burton. Please read all his publications at Brenner Brief and other publications. This is very, very disturbing, people. You know? We have seen so many atrocities underneath ISIS. You have to pay attention to the lines between the lines, okay? I was inspired to showcase my show around this particular article because it's true. Tim Burton deconstructs all of these statements, whether it be by Imam Obama or Imam Kerry or the Imam Grand Mufti. See what they're saying to you? See what they're saying to you? They're lying to you. The mainstream media picks it up and they run with it. Oh, you know, that's just bloody great. You know, even the Grand Mufti is denouncing ISIS as an enemy number one of Islam. No, it's not because they're enemy number one. They're enemy number one in your eyes, you asshole, because they went off script. See? You were supposed to conquer the West through stealth. You were supposed to infiltrate. You were supposed to propagate. You were supposed to obtain political office. And ensure policy within the political system was geared towards your Sharia. You don't like the Wahhabis here, not because of their violent actions. It's because they threw you off script. You've been sitting around for 1,400 years ever since Muhammad started slaughtering in Mecca and Medina. That's your bitch. That's your problem. Like, don't bitch to me about, you don't like ISIS. Guess you do. You're proud of ISIS. But you're ashamed at the same time because they ran off script. That's right. Wasn't it one of yours, their Saudi Arabia Grand Mufti, who said that we will conquer the West not by the sword but by the womb? Oh, Muammar Gaddafi. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What the hell, happened to that script? Oh, ISIS came along and threw it out the window. That's why you're pissed off. You're not pissed off at their actions. You don't care that they behead American journalists and that they kill, en masse, maybe up to 500 Iraqi National Army members in one day. You don't care that they slit their throats or shoot them in the back of the head, throw them in mass graves, throw them in the ISIS river. You don't care about that. No, you just care that they went off script. But we caught you. We caught you in your own bloody game. It's like the WHO says, we won't get fooled again. We have seen true Islam for what it is. It is nothing but a war-mongering political entity. It's not a religion. It is not anything born of humanity. It is horrifying what we're facing today. ISIS is just the snake that raised its head. I want to thank Tim Burton for this article. I'm probably going to be switching gears in a moment. What time is it? Oh, for goodness sake. Are you kidding me? Really? I'm 45 minutes into the show? Holy smokes. Where does the time go? I'm going to play a clip here. I want to come back because I have another article I want to relate to you, and this is from Christopher Logan of Logan's Warning. But I also have a clip here that I want to play for you. This is from Wild Bill for America. This is going to tie in to my break at the top of the hour because I think what Wild Bill says is very, very, very important. This pertains to what's going on in the United States. People in the United States, my very, very, very dear friends, are being, sorry about that, are being inundated with anarchy left, right, and center. They are being subjected from the White House down. They are being subjected with open borders. They are being subjected to illegal immigrants who may possibly find amnesty. I have interviewed Wild Bill for America a couple of times on the Red Fox Blogger. This man makes a whole lot of sense to me. I want you to take a listen to this because I, as a Canadian, I'm very close to my American cousins, and what happens to America happens to all of us. So please pay a listen to this. I'll see you back here in 3 minutes.
America needs heroes, not more radicals. As I speak, Americans are stunned and sickened by the images of ISIS Muslims, signs ahead off an American journalist. Liberals everywhere are saying, oh my, perhaps the conservatives were right all along. At least that's what they would be saying if they had any common sense. The bloodthirsty murderers of ISIS are not playing a game. And when it comes to our national security against ISIS, we better not play games either. Americans better start electing heroes to govern this nation instead of the goofy people who seem to prefer fundraisers to national security. Now, Arizona is a national security battleground state, and what happens there will affect every state. I'm thrilled to see Darla Daywald throw her hat into the race for the state legislature. She's one of the best. Darla Daywald is one of those American heroes in the making who will keep the flag of freedom flying. Darla will guard Arizona at the state level, and Gabby Saucedo-Mercer is the woman who will fight for Arizona at the federal level. Gabby is going to take on one of the villains of the left, Raul Grijalva, a career politician who notoriously called for Americans to boycott his own state because he doesn't like the idea of people being checked to see if they're illegal or not. Well, listen up, you Grijalva supporters. I want you to watch that video of ISIS sawing that young man's head off and think about Grijalva's open border policies. Unless Arizona gets some serious security, ISIS will be sawing heads off in the USA. And yes, they will also saw the heads off La Raza activists. Think about that. It's time to stop the petty politicking and choose candidates who can rise above the tit-for-tat political nonsense. Gabby Saucedo-Mercer is all of that. She's an immigrant from Mexico who studied English and the Constitution. I think it's time for Americans to grow beyond the Democrat versus Republican mentality and start looking at what is best for this nation. And in my humble opinion, we should keep people who saw heads off out of our nation. And for those of you who say, that's racist, well, you're hopeless. So, Arizona, watch for your opportunity to vote for Gabby Saucedo-Mercer. If you live outside her district, then write a check or go volunteer your time to help get her elected. And if you hate the Republicans, it's probably the arrogant D.C. Republicans. Well, guess what? Those guys are probably going to do what they can to sabotage Gabby's campaign. The fat cat Republicans don't like good Republicans like Gabby coming in and messing up their get-rich schemes. So if you want to poke the fat cat Republicans in the eye, vote for Gabby Saucedo Mercer. And when it comes to Raul Grijalva, I think it's time for all of the voters of Arizona, regardless of party, to send that career politician packing, because nobody in their right mind wants ISIS coming across that Arizona border. And yes, it's just that simple. This is Wild Bill for America. Thank you for watching, and America bless God again.
Amen to that. And I think it's time to have Wild Bill back on the show again. He said that he'll come on if I give him British Columbia. He said he'd swap it for California. I said, not a deal. But maybe I can convince him to take Vancouver, and I'll take Sacramento. Okay, we can work on a deal for that. But what he says is so true, in that we are not paying attention what's going on. I love my American cousins and what is going on under this. Administration really disturbs me. I am bereaved by the open border system that is going on down there. Americans are too. Like, what are we going to do? Offer amnesty to these 16, 17-year-old thugs? Like, come on. These are not children. We know that. They're gangbangers. They're tattooed. They're gang ordered. And they're coming to a town near you. But what else is swimming across that southern border? You've got it, ISIS. Tim alluded to that as well in the article. We're in a lot of trouble, North America, and I do not include Mexico in North America. Canada and the United States are best friends. The Canadian and the American people stick together, and we help each other. We are in quite a battle right now. It's going to get worse. ISIS will find a way to plant in middle America, middle Canada. I want to pay something. You know what, Blog Talk Radio? I do pay. Sorry about that. I want to play something for you here, which will convey what I'm trying to share with you. And my studio is acting like a real brat. Hang on, folks. You are being a real brat. I've got it. Sometimes the studio has a little mind of its own and likes to bring up things that I'm not ready for that yet. I want to share something with you, though, and this is going to be a very, very, very important program tomorrow night. And this is The Awakening. Your host is Holger Awakens. He'll be on tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If that's too late for you, no problem, because the show is going to archive. You can listen Sunday morning, or you can listen Tuesday afternoon. Or you can listen Thursday night. But this show is going to be so very important. And Stanger did the voiceover. Stanger is my voice. But please, ladies and gentlemen, listen.
This Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the Awakening Show on Blog Talk Radio, join Holger Awakens for Warmonger. The show notes are simple. Hamas, ISIS, Hezbollah, the Taliban, Al-Qaeda. Destroy them all. War drums are beating. Islam's days are numbered. The Awakening, Saturday night, August 23rd, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Islam, Delenda, S.
Please try to be there. Be in the live chat. It is always rather busy at The Awakening with Holger. I get there 20 minutes early sometimes, and I still miss my front row seat. I have to sit in the gallery. And when that happens, I ping popcorn at the back of Holger's head. Oh, no, I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding. You guys know that. It is, though, very important that you listen to these programs. Holger, the gloves are off, and we're not having it anymore. It is totally over. It is totally done. I don't know if we're in the final crusade. If we are, then put your boots on, and not the golfing shoes, okay? I was at Annie of Southern Sense today. I was pinch hitting for Dan Butcher, who has been under the weather. So Annie asked me if I could man the studio in the chat room and act as co-host, and I was more than honored. I've been doing this with Annie for a few weeks. She had a wonderful guest on the program. This man was phenomenal. He is going to kick. You know what? Let me bring it up proper, because if I get these names messed up, I feel like a real POS. So I want to bring this up properly. It was a fantastic show, though, in that she had on a wonderful guest, and that was Thomas Reveno. No, my apologies. You know what? Thomas Reveno is her encore show. And, oh, and by the way, that one was really good too, so please listen to that one. But earlier today, she had on Joe Kaufman, and he is running in Debbie Wasserman Schultz jurisdiction in Florida. Finally, we have a true Republican politician. He's not a rhino. He's the real deal. It is wonderful that we might be seeing a revitalization of the true Republican Party. I don't know if it will be returned to Ronald Reagan or Thomas Jefferson status, but hey, you know what? We can dream, can't we? Absolutely. So please, if you're in the Florida area, please show your support for Joe Kaufman. And let's get rid of Debbie Wasserman Schultz once and for all. And Beer Hunter, hey Beer, how you doing? Kel is full of maple syrup and lumberjack here. Oh, I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I'm going to take a break because I believe Michael Green is joining us after the top of the hour. But you know what? I am so sick and tired of the rhinos. I'm so sick and tired of the Democrats. Putting down the people, okay? I dedicate this song to my American cousins. And this is Living in America. We'll see everybody back here in 5 minutes. And then Michael Green will be joining us right after.
Welcome, one and all, to the City of Lights, Las Vegas, and to one of the most unusual events in years, East meets West, AIDS versus youth in a Goodwill exhibition match. As the former champion, Apollo Creed, takes on a mountain of muscle from the Soviet Union, Ivan Drago.
Get up! Ow!
welcome back, everybody. And you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your host, Kel Fritzy. We have been discussing apologetics and apologists. I'm quite frankly sick of it. The United States of America has been taking quite a few hits the last little while, and thus that was my homage to my American cousins. America will not lie down. The American people will not lie down. They are resilient, they're strong, and they will overcome this current administration that is sitting in the people's house. I am so proud as a Canadian to live next door to the greatest nation on the planet. I always say I live in the best country in the world, but the United States of America is the greatest nation on the planet. As America goes, so does the rest of us. I don't offer honorifics easily, and I don't do it to sidle up to anything or anybody, but the American people inspire me, their spirit, their dedication, their believing in their Constitution is something that no other country on the planet can rival. The American people are my mentors. I do have my friend here, Michael Green, is joining me tonight, and I want to bring him on the air right now and welcome him. Hi, Michael. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Kel?
Doing very well. Doing very well.
I want to commend you for that excellent piece of music you just played.
Ah, thanks.
As an American, I greatly appreciate it.
It's very true, you know, is that American exceptionalism is alive and well, don't you think?
I think in the American people, certainly the conservative-minded ones, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the liberals, we won't get into them tonight, and our government,
mm-hmm.
you've already torn them apart, I heard.
Oh, yeah. I tore them a new one.
But every nation is great because of its people, not because of its government.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. It's the spirit of the people. And we are not going to be cowed by our respective governments. Our respective governments will do what they do, whether it be policy, foreign policy, internal policy, but the people will always stand up and rise. This is why I'm so proud of the United States, in that there are so many grassroots movements that ensure that the spirit does keep alive.
Oh, absolutely. That's what gave birth to the Tea Party. The Tea Party
uh-huh.
was born out of a dire condition in America where leftist liberals were just wreaking havoc. And America had to rally together, true Americans, I would call them, and develop the movement and different organizations to combat the scourge of liberalism combined with Islamism. They're bedfellows. Of course, we both know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How are you feeling about things down there today? Like, the last week, the last 2 weeks. You folks have been dealing with quite a bit in the last, especially the last week or so, especially with the beheading of that American journalist.
Well, that was a horrific act of depraved barbarism. Not surprised, though. They did this many years ago in Iraq, of course. There was the famous video of Nicholas Berg, who was not a military person. He was a contractor driving a truck, kidnapped by the savages and beheaded. And, of course, the video was displayed. That was Abu al-Zarqawi. who was the Al-Qaeda point man in Iraq. He was actually the head of Al-Qaeda, a movement called the Tawhid. Excuse me, I'm probably mispronouncing it. My Arabic's not great today. But it's not to get into too much detail tonight, but that is a Islamist purist movement, which is tied to...
Oh, yeah, that's purist.
Yeah, so, you know, that's all tied in with the Salafis and the Wahhabis, but it's all Islam at the end of the day. Now,
it's
James
all
Foley,
Wahhabism. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to give different labels is somewhat erroneous because he gives a misconception that Islam is overall okay, but it's different sects within Islam that are the problem. But... you know, we know from many, many, many shows with yourself and Tim and, you know, many discussions we've all had that that's, of course, not the case. I do want to address this savage beheading, though. There are three other Americans held captive, and there is one lined up, tragically, to be executed. Of course, I'm sure, I'm sure many people in the chat room and your listeners tonight are aware of the video that was put together by ISIS, which has President Obama, clips of him speaking, and of course it has the savage beheading, and then at the end it has the next potential victim, which I believe will happen, and I say that with just great consternation and sadness that this man's life will end.
Yeah. You're referring to Stephen Sotloff.
Exactly. Now, keep in mind, all these Americans were kidnapped in Syria. That's where we know ISIS, or back then it was the Islamic State, ISIL, and the Levant, or the Sham. But their real name now, and what they want to be called, and we want to be respectful to them, is Islamic State. Interestingly, the White House... and this babbling idiot who is in our State Department, I don't recall her name, she calls them ISIL. Now, they're not ISIL.
You got to be kidding.
And you know what it does? It diminishes the seriousness. Now, there's no way the American government, I don't think any Western government, is going to call them the Islamic State, because then it interjects the word Islam and Islamic, and, you know, political correctness will not permit that. Anyway, our gutless administration calls them ISIL. It's kind of funny, you know. I think of laughing when I hear it, but it's nothing comical because there's such savagery being perpetrated by these, you know, thugs and terrorists. So, yeah, our government has made statements. Nothing strong enough. Obama went back to the golf course. I think he took a 10-minute break, came in front of the cameras. He addressed the fact that this American had been beheaded. He made a couple of statements. He did say that Islamic State or ISIS or ISIL is a cancer, but not a very strong response you expect for the leader of, you know, what is considered the most powerful nation on the earth. So it was very disgraceful, and then he went back to his vacation at Martha's Vineyard.
Well, that was the same what happened in the U.K. David Cameron was on vacation, and he dropped everything. He came back, made a speech. 19 hours later, he's back on the sunny beaches. These administrations don't care about the people. They don't care about us. They come back for their, you know, sound bites and like, oh, this is absolutely terrible. And then they're off again into their ivory towers. I swear, I don't know what is going on with this.
It's a condition of the West not willing to properly confront this enormous threat. Many months ago, you recall, on the air, I had stated clearly that very strong and decisive military action was necessary almost immediately to head off ISIS, and of course it wasn't done. It was only at the 11th hour. What really brought that to the forefront was the tragic condition and plight and slaughter of the Yazidis. The Christians in Mosul were being slaughtered, and our government didn't say a peep, nor any other government. So those people stranded on Mount Sinjar that brought it into the forefront, CNN, the BBC, all the big cable news networks ran the story. White House had no choice. They had to address it. They've done about 90 airstrikes up until today. I don't know how many were conducted today. After James Foley was executed, mm-hmm. they conducted 6 airstrikes. Now, if anyone knows anything about military issues, and when you are at war, and we are at war, 6 airstrikes is pathetic. It's beyond pathetic. You know, what you do is you run sorties, and you send out your fighter jets and other tactical aircraft that have, you know, really strong munitions, and we have great technology. We can ID targets. So I thought it was embarrassing that our response to the slaughter of this man, a journalist, mind you, journalists have always usually been, in previous conflicts, never targeted by the enemy. You know, they've died on the battlefield, but not from direct fire, indirect fire. But that's not the case. Mm-hmm. 28 journalists to date have been slaughtered by the Islamists in Syria. So the response on a military level from the U.S. Is pretty pathetic. There's been some news conferences where the Defense Secretary, Chuck Hagel, has alluded to the possibility of conducting airstrikes in Syria because, of course, ISIS is based out of Syria in a town called Raqqa. That's their headquarters. They have a lot of fighters in Syria and a lot of equipment. The only way to take them down is to target them in both locations, in Syria and, of course, in Iraq. We did get back control of the Mosul Dam thanks to the Peshmerga, who are great fighters, and our air support.
Oh, yeah.
So we got that. You know, that's kind of a one-up for the good guys, but there's a lot more needs to be done here. And honestly, without some type of ground offensive, ISIS will not be dislodged. They are too entrenched in Anbar province. Of course, they're controlling Mosul, and they're in Fallujah and Ramadi, and many, many places. You can go on the Internet and actually see a map of Iraq and see where ISIS has taken over. So, you know, what is the long-term goals of the West? Is it to eradicate this scourge, or is it to just kind of degrade them somewhat temporarily, try to contain them? It's very hard to predict with Obama. It's an election year, so I believe he's taking action because he must make himself look good. The Democratic Party, the Senate's on the line. They want to get more seats in the House. So it's all about politics. At the end of the day, I don't think he gives a darn about really what's going on there.
No, I don't think he does at all. He's offering lip service. This is what I find especially distressing. That's why I was speaking about, you know, his not respecting the American people in his platitudes, and that's why I played that song, because it is important to me that people differentiate between the American administration and the American people. There's a huge, huge difference there, don't you think, Michael?
There is, up to a point. Let's be honest. Huge numbers of Americans voted for him in 2008. They returned to the polls 4 years later, and they voted him in again. America's gone way to the left.
And he took both the House and the Senate. Yeah.
Well, no, we control the House. We've had the House of Representatives. We have an overwhelming majority there, but we have a bunch of gutless cowards in the House of Representatives.
Okay.
The Democrats have had the Senate for an enormous length of time, and it would be great if we can get it back, but that's to be seen. America is not the great nation it was, honestly. I mean, it is great in certain respects, certainly, and there are tremendous people in this nation. I mean, especially our veterans and our service members who have sacrificed so much, and their families, military families, moms, dads, brothers and sisters, you know, wives, husbands, fiancés, you name it. And I've been blessed to meet so many of them in 5 years under tragic circumstances, though, due to, you know, catastrophic wounds and even death. But these people are the core of this nation. those that have answered the call to arms, that have stepped up and said, I'm going to sign a check. It's a blank check, and that includes up to my life. And that's what you do when you go into the armed forces, especially if you choose to go into the infantry, you know, where you're going to be on the ground fighting these people, whether it's the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, or any other name that these terrorist organizations have. They're all the same enemy. They share the same ideology.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. I was discussing this with Annie of Southern Sense on her program today. I pinch hit for Dan Butcher. He's on vacation, so I step in for Dan and help Annie out. We were talking about Barack Hussein Obama. I refuse to call him president. I know a lot of people say to me, well, you shouldn't do that because, you know, he did earn the vote. But he has been doing everything wrong from day one. Yeah, 2008 totally, like 2012 was the big kicker. And that I was speaking with Annie, and I said that he didn't even have the, you know, the audacity to show up. Well, not audacity, that's the wrong word. Michael, bear with me for a moment. He did not even show up for General Green's funeral. This is a high-ranking general. This is the highest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, two-star brigadier general.
And he didn't show up. He came out, and when the American journalist was slaughtered, he had no idea what to say about James Foley. It's this so-called president is beyond my comprehension.
He certainly has done things that no other sitting U.S. president has done, and I doubt they'll be repeated. That's how bad he is. I do want to share some information for a moment, though. There are about 100 Americans on the ground with ISIS, and that's been pretty much confirmed. So that's a very distressing thing to be aware of, that 100 people who are, they have citizenship in this country, whether they were born Muslim or they're converts. I can't respond to that, but they are there fighting with ISIS. And we do know that the British government has made a statement, or one of their representatives did, that approximately 2,000, it's a massive number, have left the UK and are on the ground in Iraq and Syria. And then you got all the other Western European countries where you have collectively, I would say, easily in the thousands of others who have gone over there, and then you have who knows how many others on the way. Keep in mind, ISIS has massive financial assets. They can easily facilitate people who want to join their little band of merry men and facilitate them with transportation costs or whatever. Get them in there, in other words. So they're going to keep filling the ranks. You know, that video, that despicable video and the photos, because those photos and video were all over social media. They're still on social media, but Twitter's cracking down on it. Facebook is trying to crack down on it, but they'll keep popping up. But anyway, that's a recruiting tool. As sick and depraved as that sounds, that, you know, who would want to be part of a group of people after watching a live human being having their head cut off? Well, there are people that does inspire, along with the ideology. It says something about the times we live in.
I am getting rather distressed about what's happening within the realm of propaganda with Islam in the West. I have an article here, and Chris... is from Christopher Logan. My apologies. This is rather distressing, and that he had to write this, and he had to dissect it. I want to share it with you, and this pertains to the beheading of James Foley. I'm going to read some of it verbatim. I'll put the link in the chat room right now. So everybody, please follow the bouncing ball. This is from Christopher Logan of Logan's Warning. Here's the article. Oh, it is unbelievable, Michael, that this sort of thing can not only go on, but nobody seems to be paying attention.
Oh, absolutely. No one's paying attention. I mean, very few people are. We talked about it previously, not to get into it. It's a lengthy topic, but social media is infested with the Islamic State followers. Certainly people who are actually fighters on the ground have Facebook pages. They have people that set up these pages. The pages have the ideology and a lot of graphic imagery, graphic videos. And it's really disturbing that these huge organizations, these social media conglomerates, are not policing their sites. And now they are a little bit more because of the beheading of James Foley. But one of the reasons that the Islamic State has been able to recruit in such a massive way has been a very well-coordinated recruiting campaign disseminated through social media. And, you know, you wonder, it just baffles you. Don't these people feel any obligation ethically or morally to try to stop allowing murderous, you know, Islamist terrorist savages to use what they created to help perpetuate the slaughter of human beings?
Absolutely. It's absolutely appalling. Of course it is. I want to relate this article to you and the listeners. So this is from Logan's Warning, and this is Christopher Logan. And he has been discussing, of course, the Islamic State on his website. And ladies and gentlemen, that is loganswarning.com. So please visit his site. But he says that the Islamic State, what the media doesn't tell you about the beheadings, what he relates, he's been doing a commentary, or a running commentary on his website. This article is brilliant, though. And this is him quoting from an IP site. President Barack Obama said Wednesday that the entire world is appalled by the brutal death of American journalist James Foley, who was shown in a video released by the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq being beheaded. Well, first of all, ISIS is an acronym for Islamic State of al-Sham, which is Syria. And now they have shortened their acronym to IS, which only means Islamic State. Okay, only means that's for the sake of edification. That's what I'm putting in there. Now, this is what Obama said in his statement. No faith teaches people to massacre innocents. No just God would stand for what they did yesterday and what they do every single day. Remember, this is his public statement from Wednesday. So when you encounter in battle those who disbelieve, then attack them with a striking of the neck. And that is Tha Dar El Rikabe. And that is a verbal noun in place of the full verbal construction. That is to say, Tha Dirub Rikab Hum. Then strike their necks. In other words, slay them. Reference is made to the striking of the necks because the predominant cause of being slayed is to be struck in the neck. then when you have made thoroughly, decimated them, bind, spare them, take them captive, and bind firmly the bonds. And that is Al-Wathak, and what is used to bind you, Thako, as a captive. Therefore, either set them free by grace. Madan is a verbal noun in place of the full verbal construction. That is to say, either show them grace by setting them unconditionally or by ransom, ransoming them with payment or with Muslim captives until the war, that is to say, its participants lay down its burdens, its heavy loads of weaponry and other things, so that either the disbelievers surrender or enter into a treaty. I'm going to pause it there because I do want to scroll down a bit. Obama didn't really know what the hell he was talking about when he came out with that statement on Wednesday.
Well, you wouldn't
expect
anything.
On to say,
mm-hmm. Sorry, go
yeah.
ahead.
No, he went on to say, well, this is verbatim from the Quran. This is verse 47-4. And I actually brought this up earlier on the program. And had God willed, he could have himself taken vengeance on them without any fighting, but he has commanded you to do it, that he may test some of your measures by means of others from among them by way of battle, so that the slain among you will end up in paradise, while those slain among them will end up in the fire. And those who are slain, quito, a variant reading of quitatu, those who fight. This verse was revealed on the day of the battle of Uhud, after the dead and the wounded had become numerous amongst Muslims in the way of God. He will not let their works go to waste. He will not render them void. And this is so true. Barack Hussein Obama coming out saying that Obama, what he said is unreal. No just God would stand for what ISIS did to James Foley. Well, no. Their God did. They follow a moon god, Obama. They did exactly what they were instructed to do by Muhammad, the perfect man. Back to you, Michael.
Well, of course we know, I shouldn't say of course, the fact is that the Quran is the source of the commands, because they are commands, in the matter that jihadists are to wage their holy war. And it's all there. Thanks for sharing that. I do want to get into something that I wanted to touch on last week, but we ran out of time, and it's a very important, it's an important piece of information.
Oh,
the government of Turkey, the government of Turkey has been supporting and assisting the Islamic State, primarily through a particular organization that the son of, who is now the president of Turkey, he was formerly the prime minister, he is now the president. And his name is, it's not an easy name to pronounce, but it's Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Okay, well, he has a son, and his son is connected to an organization that receives money from international sponsors. It's financed by a very wealthy Saudi businessman who is Al-Qaeda linked. And he has close ties to the now president of Turkey. There's another affiliate of this organization. Its acronym is IHH. I'll tell you what that stands for in a minute. Who is a Saudi-based sheikh. Sheikh Yusuf Qadadri. And he advocates suicide bombings. And then there's a couple of these characters, no point in naming them, who are connected to this organization. The point is, this organization has been funding the Islamic State primarily in Syria. You know, you have to wonder, where did the Islamic State get all this weaponry?
Oh, well, they took out a little bit of a withdrawal from one of the banks.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean previous to that. Yeah, they did. They robbed a bank in Mosul of about $500 million. But previous to
Yeah,
this,
I know. Yeah.
We have to remember that they got their start in Syria. I mean, they are actually a connection to the Islamic State in Iraq, which existed during the Iraq War. But our forces pretty much put them down. They're all in a place called Jahannam, which means hell in Arabic. So United States military personnel sent them where they wanted to go. They arranged their meeting with Allah. Now, over time, of course, because Syria became the new jihadi battleground, and Baghdadi, who was formerly in a place called Camp Buka, under the custody of American military forces, he was released, turned over, and he is the Khalifa. He's their caliphate. But anyway, they got their strength. They started to build themselves up militarily in Syria. And I think it's important to understand that, and also to understand the fact that a country like Turkey, which happens to be a member of NATO, has
No, I'm sorry. I'm interjecting because Doc brought up a really good point in the chat room. Who really started their funding was the CIA. We have been dealing with this ad nauseum for so long. We funded the Mujahideen, or I'm sorry, the
Mujahideen.
Michael, thank you. And we have been funding all these front groups for so very long. Once again, it's North America and the West in general funding all of these groups. It is very, very frustrating. They take our weapons, and now they're using them against us. And Doc brought up a really good point, is that they are using our very own we're benefactors. And they're using it against us now. That is Islam.
There is some truth to that. I'd like to address that. What happened here is that the U.S. government had an opportunity about 2 years ago to arm and fund the FSA. That's the Free Syrian Army, which in the beginning stages was more or less secular. Okay, mm-hmm. Other groups popped up called Al-Nusra and the Islamic Front, and I'll just name those right now for two. They're the two most prominent, the largest. This corrupt government in the United States decided to, first of all, we sent 300 Marines to Jordan, we sent Marines to Saudi Arabia, and we decided to train these fighters. We also started to equip them with small arms weaponry, probably night optics, communication-type devices, and so forth. Interestingly enough, I have seen photos of these fighters in Syria with a 50-cal barrette. If anybody knows what that is, it is about a $10,000 weapon. It is used by Navy SEALs. It's a sniper weapon, and it does devastating damage. And you could kill someone at a mile with that weapon if you know how to use it right. But anyway, very expensive, very sophisticated weaponry, and a certain amount of them actually got into the hands of these so-called rebels. Now, yes, some of this hardware probably got into the clutches of ISIS. Whether we directly gave that to them through the CIA, I could not say that that is truth or fact. You know, I think it would have to be carefully researched. Our government did, without a doubt, give military training and weaponry to these other groups that were within the umbrella of the FSA. Whether our government, in a deliberate way, wanted to arm ISIS, I would reserve judgment until further research.
It's all the same.
Yeah, but nonetheless, there's no question that the United States policy was a terrible policy. It was a failed policy. The truth is, it's better to have a dictator, a strong-arm Arab dictator. And what they do is they keep the Islamists out. They crush them. I mean, Mubarak did it to the Muslim Brotherhood. Saddam Hussein was no nice guy. I'm not praising Saddam Hussein, but let's look at the truth. He kept that country under control. And if Al-Qaeda was in Iraq, if Al-Qaeda was
of course he did.
Yeah, if Al-Qaeda was, I believe Al-Qaeda had somewhat of a presence in Iraq years ago, but it was very limited. And, you know, once again, these are secular dictators. The bad thing that Saddam did is he funded Hamas, and every time a suicide bomber slaughtered Jews in Israel, he sent him a $25,000 reward or payment. But at the end of the day, take the whole region and look at Libya. Libya is a failed state. You have numerous Islamist groups there. When they raided the stockpiles and the weapons of the Gaddafi regime, a lot of that fell into Islamist terrorist groups' hands. Okay, Barack Obama brought that about. He brought about the demise of Gaddafi. He didn't really intercede in Syria to try to bring down Assad, which I have to say is a good thing, because if Assad was removed from power, we would have a Islamist terrorist state. Still a failed state somewhat, but Assad's holding on to power for now. Egypt is another good example where the Muslim Brotherhood stepped in. Fortunately, a lot of Egyptians rejected it after 1 year, and then the army took power with al-Assisi, who now is the president, and he runs the country. Thank God for that Egypt is not under the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
But Iraq could fall without the proper military intervention. And, of course, Syria, it's hard to say. The Islamic State is battling al-Nusra. The Islamic State is battling the Islamic Front and other FSA fighters. And, of course, at the same time, they're battling the Assad forces. But American foreign policy has been a disaster under Obama. It's been an absolute disaster.
And I'm just reading the chat room, and Beer Hunter brought up a really good point, and that he said that Jimmy Carter warned us 40 years ago. No, I'm sorry. My apologies. It was Doc. Like him or not, President Carter warned us about this 40 years ago. Now, I know that President Carter has been renowned as a very, very, very weak president in the history books, but I'm kind of missing him. It's almost like people are sporting T-shirts saying that, do you miss me yet? Because Obama has been an absolute disaster.
I think that's Bush maybe you're referring to. There are T-shirts out there about Bush, but I don't know about Carter. Carter screwed up.
I've seen the Carter T-shirts on Facebook pages.
That's interesting. I had no idea that those were out there. Well, you know, that's a whole other topic for maybe another show, but Jimmy Carter did enormous damage to this nation, and I don't know if he warned about this. I can't say. I know Jimmy Carter loves Muslim terrorists. I know he has gone in person to meet with Khalid Mashal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Jimmy Carter is a Jew hater also. He has a great disdain for Jews and, of course, for Israel. He wrote a book called Apartheid Nation. Jimmy Carter's kind of off his rocker at this point in his 80s, and he's kind of a senile kook. But Jimmy Carter messed up with our hostages. When Ronald Reagan said...
Oh, that was a terrible mess.
Well, Ronald Reagan said, you know, if those hostages are not released the day that I take the inaugural oath, you know, he threatened the Islamic revolution in Iran, the leaders, and he was serious. And what do you think happened? The hostages were released. Under Carter, the hostages remained for enormous length of time. So, you know, there's many things that he didn't do too good at. But, you know, the bottom line here is
that... he was very, very weak, but it's interesting that even what I consider in political circles to be one of the weakest presidents in modern history is Jimmy Carter, and he's getting better grades than Obama.
Obama's number one, Carter's number two. That's pretty much how it rolls. Exactly. I would like to talk about Israel before we run out of time, only because
we're down to our last 10 minutes of talking points. So, and Michael, this is your forum, so please go right ahead.
After numerous failed attempts to reach an extended truce, of course, the last time Hamas broke that, they fired off about 50 rockets, and then the IDF responded. Punishing airstrikes have been going on for numerous days. Some good news is that the IDF was able to take out three top Hamas commanders who each respectively had important roles in the Hamas military machine. So those three men are now in Jahannam, and they're gone. Of course, the remaining Hamas leadership and their spokespeople are very upset, and they're making more threats. There was an attempt to assassinate, to take out a man named Mohammed Daif, who is the commander of the Hamas military wing, Al-Qassam Brigades. Unfortunately, he was not martyred. He's still breathing. Wounded, I don't know, or not wounded. His wife and his child were killed. That's how that went. And, of course, that angered the Hamas leadership and, of course, their supporters there. So what's been happening here is that the IDF has been responding very aggressively, and there's been many other rockets fired at Israel, just to kind of synopsize it, many more other attacks. It was just a four-year-old Israeli boy who was killed by a barrage of mortars, I think, in the past 24 hours. A couple of Israelis wounded. Rockets fired into Tel Aviv, no damage. And they've, of course, threatened to rocket Ben-Gurion International Airport. Israel has done the right thing. They responded very strongly with punishing airstrikes. I don't see them coming back to the table for any of these absurd peace talks. I did find an interesting piece of information. We do know the tunnels that were infiltration tunnels from Gaza into Israel have been taken out. But as I always thought, that there was a massive number of tunnels going the other direction into the Sinai where they get resupplied with weapons.
Oh, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, there's 500 of those tunnels intact. Now, the good news is the big tunnels, which allows even cars or vehicles to come into Gaza, you know, very large, wide, massive tunnels are gone. But there is about 500 tunnels in operation, and those tunnels enable the flow of weapons and, humanitarian aid, whatnot, and things like that. It's very hard. The Sinai is a massive area to police, even though the Egyptian government doesn't want to see Hamas, so they're kind of cracking down on it, more or less. But at the same time, it's hard to stop all that. So, you know, the idea that Hamas is going to kind of not be able to resupply, well, they certainly will. Possibly there might be another ground incursion by the Israeli forces, the IDF. There's a possibility that they might do that, but it's not definite yet. I believe it's necessary, so do others. No one wants to see these young warriors, you know, get wounded or lose their life. But at the end of the day, if Hamas is not completely taken out, and once again, you know, you can't do it just with airstrikes, just like in Iraq. You got to send boots in on the ground at some point if you want to defeat your enemy. If you want to just degrade them and contain them, well, then that's okay, but it's not okay because down the road they're going to reconstitute and they're going to come back.
Hey, I was perusing, you know, my various websites, and somebody posted a cartoon. It was two American soldiers, and they were lacing up golf shoes. And the one Marine looks at the other, and he says, "Golf shoes?" And the other turns to him and says, well, Obama said no boots on the ground.
That's a good one.
Every time there's a crisis, this guy goes on vacation.
Well, that's what you can expect. The world's on fire, and catastrophic things are happening. America's security is under great threat. The West is under great threat. You know, others have come out, and they've said that the Islamic State must be dealt with. But at the end of the day, it's up to this administration, this so-called president and his cabinet. I do know for a fact that our people in the Pentagon want to take out the Islamic State.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very frustrated and very, they are very discontent that this so-called president is not willing to act. Martin Dempsey, General Dempsey, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he made an asinine statement recently about possible containment of the Islamic State. Instead of what we would want to hear is the all-out destruction of this terrorist organization. So no one knows which way it's going to go. Although I will say, in the event, and God forbid, there is a terrorist attack on American soil by the Islamic State, and they certainly want to hit us, and they're going to try, that might push things to the point where the Obama administration may have no other option but to just go all out war, and you know,
yeah,
do that. But one thing I want to address, because people hear this all the time in the media, I know we're running out of time, there's a statement that I hear all the time, and it really gets me ticked off. Well, do Americans have the appetite for war? They've been in war for 13 years or 12 years. Does the country have the appetite? You know, I sit here and I think, who are these people talking about in terms of having an appetite for war? Are we talking about someone who sat on their couch and done nothing, you know, clicked their remote? You know, someone who goes to Walmart or goes to the mall, goes get their hair done, goes to a baseball game or a football game? I mean, our fighters, our military are ready to take it to them. You know, guys who've been there. Yeah, guys who've been there will go back. So I find it to be just outrageous, and it's insulting to the people that sacrificed so far to say, well, Americans, do they have an appetite or they're tired of the war? You know what? You can't be tired of this war unless you fought it.
Michael, I want to thank you so very much for being here tonight and relating everything that you have shared with my listeners. You are always a welcome addition here. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. I also want to thank everybody for their outpouring of best wishes for Tim Burton, my co-host, and for his spouse, June, and his family. We work very, very hard on these programs. You can hear Red Fox Blogger Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Tim and myself, we co-host at Radio Jihad Network at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Radio Jihad. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. on Red Fox Blogger, you can listen to Mike Holt of Restore Australia. Thursdays at 1 p.m., you have Islam Exposed, and that is with Dave Milner, Tim Burton, and myself. And, of course, Friday, you can hear me as I fly solo, but not so much solo anymore at 7 p.m. because Michael Green joins me. So I want to thank you all for being here. Michael, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me back on. I do want to say many prayers for Tim's speedy recovery, full recovery, and, of course, for his wife. And let's please keep in our thoughts and prayers anyone who's in harm's way, whatever country you live in, you know, pray for our people here in America, because America has about 800 military personnel on the ground in Iraq, and we might have more going. So your prayers are most welcome.
Oh, God. Yeah, absolutely.
And pray for those hostages.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes, absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, pray for Israel as well.
Amen.
Good night, Michael.
Good night.
And remember, folks, it's mass Islamity, and we have to stop the insanity. I will see you back here Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time.